Welcome to This Week in the Warner Archive Collection, where we discuss our newest releases. I'm George Feltenstein, and I'm proud to be joined by my colleagues, Matt Patterson and D.W. Ferranti.
Hi, this is Warner Archive Collection bringing you a very special episode. We're going to have a commentary for Young Justice Outsiders, so cue up your Blu-ray player. This is Private Security, Episode 4, Season 3, Young Justice Outsiders. And we're about to go now.
There's the DC Universe logo. I'm Matt Patterson.
I'm D.W. Ferranti.
And we have two special guests here with us.
I'm Greg Weissman, one of the producers of Young Justice.
And I'm Brandon Vietti. I'm the other producer on Young Justice.
And we're doing a commentary. So we're in Star City.
That's right. So we get to see Roy Harper with his dad bod. Which I was not in favor of, but Brandon and Phil really liked a lot.
Yeah, it's nice to see. Again, you know, our show's always so real and grounded. We wanted to show a character that, you know, wasn't necessarily in his prime physical condition. This can happen. This happens in real life.
Yeah, it's too close to for comfort. It's too real.
But not everybody has a floating body in the living room.
That's true.
This was his mission.
I know.
So?
What I love about these domestic scenes is, of course, everybody loves coffee. everybody has a pet. Like, this is the thing where and everybody has a cell phone. And I love every time somebody looks at a cell phone in this show, I can't help laughing because it feels so incredibly real.
Well, and it was very important, too, to work these scenes with cell phones in. And even like you saw on the cell phone screen there was an advertisement for Good Goggles, yes, which is a huge thing that runs in the show. So we're planting these seeds for payoffs that come many episodes later, but we're tracking that stuff in as best we can.
And speaking of the Good Goggles, that corporation has a very interesting logo.
Yeah.
I'm a little unsure how you came up with
where
that.
Where did you get that idea?
Our bosses may have had some influence there. I mean, not our bosses telling us to do it, but, you know, we like to pay homage to the company that we work for. So the Warner Brothers shield was an influence.
Dick, where are you?
See, again, wonderful moments there standing outside the hotel. When did you decide that Lex Luthor should be a hotel operator of luxury resorts?
I think he's always been that.
I believe that 100%, by the way.
Now, this new title sequence, it's great because you get the whole show across. I mean, whose idea was this?
Because that was Brandon, yeah, completely.
Because I love it.
Earth Apocalypse and then the Metagene. I mean, it's the show.
Very simple, yeah. And, you know, just wanted to be strong, impactful, simple, and have real gravity to it because we were going to a darker place this season. It's a scarier vibe throughout the season, and we wanted the main title to reflect that.
And, you know, it only took me about 5 or 6 episodes to figure it out, and I felt smart.
Now, who came up with the idea for the All in the Harper episode?
You know,
that initially was me, but it's not like, I mean, we break everything together.
Right. But I think this is actually a good demonstration of how we work, because I think Greg and I came into this and I think he wanted to do an all Harper episode. I had an idea for this security guard vibe going on.
Yeah.
That Will would have started his own company.
Right.
For private security.
Sure.
And so we just kind of blended our two ideas and this is what came out of it. And it was also a very important episode because our first 3 episodes in the series were very dark, of this particular
right.
season, were very dark. And I mean, both from a dramatic standpoint and also from a time of day standpoint, most
right.
of the first 3 episodes are like happening in one right. night. So we wanted a daylight episode. We wanted it to breathe, open it up and be fun and funny. And this is what we came up with.
And this,
I love the music.
Yeah.
And this is that speaks to dynamic music partners.
Right.
I mean, they're such an important part of what we do to help sell the comedy of that moment. You take the comedy out of that moment with that slow motion walk to the camera, it's just not the same. You know,
it's like kind of the perfect 80s movie here, because it's like, what if a bunch of down and out superheroes
right.
had to get jobs as private security?
Speaking of, I'm sure if you're listening to this, you already know the answer. But just in case, What is the actual relationship between these three gingered-haired gentlemen?
Okay, so in the back on the passenger side is the original Roy Harper, who just prior to season one, a few years prior to season one, was kidnapped by the light and cloned twice. One of the clones thought he was Roy Harper for a long time, but turned out to be Red Arrow and a clone of the original Speedy. Red Arrow became, in between season two and season three, started using his middle name Will, since Roy was back now. So,
right.
And then the third clone, the guy in the back seat on the driver's side, is Jim Harper, who had been programmed to believe that he was Roy's uncle, but in fact was also just another clone of the original Roy. And so you have the Guardian, Arsenal, formerly Speedy, and Red Arrow, formerly Speedy, who are now all, in essence, treating each other like brothers.
Right.
And I wish I could have been in the room when Crispin Freeman, the voice actor for all three of those characters, learned he was going to be doing this episode and talking to himself and having to separate each of those voices and those personalities. It's quite a challenge, I'm sure, for him.
And it really is about acting, because he's not doing different voices for them. He's just acting each character's personality in their own way. And that's a lot harder than just, you know, someone doing, oh, I'm going to do a high voice for this guy and a low voice for this guy.
One of the true things about clones, because we do have that in our world and they're called identical twins. If you know any identical twins, they are not the same. They are different people. They may have the same apparatus, but they sound so that's why it's great, because they're real true twins.
And that's sort of one of the trademarks of you guys' writing is, since we first met these characters in season one, they have become three very distinct people.
Now we've coming to the other plot, which I love this subplot so much. I guess not as like a co-plot, however you want to call it, in this, because it's a wonderful, self-contained, highly emotionally charged moment.
Yeah, I mean, this is overall a funny episode, or at least we like to think so. But this is a dramatic, hard subplot here. Not this little bit with Halo, which is just really clues for what's happening down the road, but this bit between Dr. Fate and Zatanna.
And something we wanted to get back to. I know after we finished our second season, we felt like there was unfinished business here, and that's why we introduced this thread again as soon as we could after our initial three episodes kind of set up the whole season.
Right.
But man, when we got to the fourth episode, we went right back to this, because we knew there was a bigger story to tell here, and we wanted to dive into it.
And just the idea that Zatara, you know, it's in the 8 years since he put on the helmet, his hair's gone, you know, shock white. The idea that being Dr. Fate takes it out of you. And that's aside from the fact that he's, in essence, missed his daughter aging from age 14 to 22.
Yeah. And it's this kind of wonderful, almost, you know, Greek mythological curse, you know, like only but once a year. Like, it just has all this very poetic quality. And I actually also love the setting, the tree in the park. Like, it's just so well thought out. And it is just a wonderful, because, you know, this is television.
Yeah,
right?
That's a nice counterpoint.
Yeah, our director, Vincent Hewick, came up with the idea of the willow tree. I think we had originally thought it would be sort of out in the middle of the park with big blue skies, and he wanted this more intimate setting, and it was really beautiful the way it came out. We're very happy with that.
There's also a little thing that we missed while we were talking there, where Roy says to Jim, when Jim's talking about the VR goggles, that...
Yeah.
You're spending too much time with your geraniums, which is a big hint for what's coming way at the end of the season.
Right.
I, of course, just felt that was me with Pokemon Go, with all the people with the goggles running around the park, not seeing where they're going. So I stopped.
Again,
we
know,
shamed you.
Yeah.
trying to bring in, you know, technology that exists and people are taking advantage of now. I think we push it just a little bit into the future with the goggles aspect, but you know, we're always trying to incorporate interesting technology into the show, but maybe technology from tomorrow, not necessarily today. Based on today, so it feels familiar though. Of course, we're building a relationship here. I mean, this whole story, there's such a big story for Dick Grayson in this episode. It's another coming of age story in a way. I mean, he's having to step into a role that he's just not comfortable with, and he's really coming to grips with that in this through the help of his friends.
Right.
And it's something that it will play out through the rest of the season as well. But it very much spins off of our second season. We didn't just start this third season and sort of ignore everything that came before. We very much picked up with where we left off at the end of season two. Even though time has passed, there were unresolved issues at the end of our second season that continue to affect our characters a year later. And we wanted to, you know, really dive into that and show how that works and show how characters are still living with unresolved issues and how their friends are there to support them or not in some cases.
Well, it's just the show has group dynamics, power, you know, trying to convince people, live up to roles, assuming roles. It's all packed in here, as well as
robot arms.
Robot arms and driving terribly on PCH.
How did you come up with the who was going to be in the heist gang?
Oh, I don't remember. I know.
I think it was just Brick is sort of the Star City mobster that we established back in season one. He's such a fun character, and he's tough enough to give these guys a challenge.
Yeah.
So that sort of smoking the bandit notion of you've got the three trucks you've hijacked. And the follow car,
you know,
whether it's so we wanted a little Fast and the Furious in there, a little Smoking the Bandit, just have fun with that kind of stuff.
And
Brick is a big enough personality and a big enough character to let us play that out.
We're going to be getting to it, but his reaction to the scenario is wonderful and naturalistic as a supervillain can be. Because of the deadliest clipboard in the world.
Brandon gets credit for the clipboard, for making the clipboard a character.
Yeah, yes. Well, it was fun. I mean, it wasn't just the job. We wanted to show, you know, that he traded in the bow and arrow for the clipboard. So the clipboard had to have as much presence as any other.
He's a family man.
Yeah, exactly.
I also love this little sequence here because you really see the change in Connor from season one, you know, the young angry man that we introduced in season one is now literally our Zenist character.
Right.
And he's motorcycle maintenancing.
Yeah.
Zen, the art of.
Zen. Yeah.
So, just as with Will, with the security firm, we thought a lot about what each of these characters, now that they're adults, are doing for a living and that kind of thing. So, so Connor does custom bike repairs. Miss Martian is a counselor at the high school. Artemis is a professor at the university and studying for a doctorate. And so all this stuff we wanted to sort of say where these characters been, where are they going, that kind of thing.
And they have wonderful day jobs. Like as you just pointed out, they feel very modern and realistic. Like, well, what can I do when I'm not saving the world?
Right. And how do I earn a living?
Well, yeah, how do you, because corporate sponsorship is off the table.
I think we wanted to, you know, also find ways within that. Once we kind of figured out what they did for a living outside was, you know, how can they also be superheroes in those roles?
Right.
You know, so for instance, with McGann being a therapist, you know, we have a great story later on where she's being a hero in that moment.
Right.
I think, you know, Connor may not be a superhero to the motorcycles, but, you know, seeing where he's come and seeing how that is sort of a Zen thing for him and a calming thing, and seeing him work with Brionne, who's sort of the angry guy now that he used to be, and seeing how he's trying to help this guy out, you know, even outside of a superheroic dynamic situation, these characters are still heroes.
His Brion's background of privilege is wonderfully on display too in these things, because you know these are very they're middle class characters, well off middle class characters. They seem, you know, comfortable, but
I remind you that Dick is the protege of Bruce Wayne.
Well,
Dick has money.
He does.
Actually, in our, we haven't really gotten to it yet, but not Will, but Roy has money. Because in our continuity, Green Arrow was rich and lost it all, but he had already established a trust fund for Roy, so Roy has money. There is a little spoiler. I just gave a spoiler.
Ooh.
I never give spoilers.
And he didn't blow it on heroin like in the comics.
No, that was Will who was on heroin.
I have that T-shirt, by the way. That's one of my favorite graffiti designs T-shirts.
I love the fact that this was staged by the swing set.
Yeah, father and daughter. And I'm not kidding. When Lacey Chabert, who performs Zatanna, did this scene, she literally had all of us in tears in the control room. I mean, it broke our hearts.
Incredible.
And us at home.
It's great. Yeah, no, this is one of the moments that really stuck with me from the whole series. Like, because it's very simple, but huge.
So heartfelt. Yeah, it's a heartbreaking scene.
And, you know, and then, of course, the support of the friends.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful moment. And then, of course, we come to the best part. Helping
your
friends. I just
love that he's so badass.
Yeah, it's nice to see them in a situation that it's still dangerous, but this is not as high stakes as we've seen them in before, but it's still a challenge. So,
which is why they have like a Jackie Chan attitude here,
right?
Yeah, it's a little lighter in tone because it can be. This isn't the hardest thing that they've ever come across.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that to me is also kind of a heart. It's funny, but it's a heartbreaking moment when he calls him Wall instead of Will. You know.
Oh.
But they're so battle-hardened, too, that, you know, they can stop and have this conversation on the top of a moving semi-truck.
As you do.
Yeah. They're, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, okay, there we are.
And it's also a call-out to all the previous seasons and also the way that you broke down the end of Season 2 and the start of Season 3, where the shadow of Wally is still over everyone's lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was important. We wanted to carry that thread throughout the season.
The whole season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was, you know, unforgettable moment from previous episodes. I'm watching. So I don't sound really intelligent when I'm watching a show and talking about it at the same time.
Clipboard!
Boom.
Oh. It's fun to do these episodes. I mean, we know where we want the drama, but we know we need the balance. The drama just doesn't work as well if it's all drama all the time. We know we need the comedy for the balance.
Well, and here, what I, of course, like is when you are having action like this and, you know, advancing the plot and the character development. Like all these layers are at work here at the same time.
Also, the nuance, like the fact that, you know, this is a superhero, supervillain battle, but really, Brick's just annoyed.
Yeah, no, the battle isn't with him.
The battle is for Dick's soul.
Yeah, yeah. He's a prop.
Well, he's a prop with personality.
Yeah.
Oh, this, ouch.
That's gotta hurt.
This ain't right at all.
He's okay. Supervillains have a wonderful medical plan in this world.
And the top hat, the derby on this character is very, very Jack Kirby.
Daddy Lids. Character designed for Season 1 by Jerome Moore.
It's a great
right there. And that's a poster.
Yeah, it
that's
is.
That's the movie poster.
That's the Bruckheimer movie poster. Yeah. Bow Hunter.
If you guys need any ideas for, you know, a feature film, there, that's a good one. Because I know you don't have any.
You're the youngest guy here.
Hey, I'm older than Jim, but I'm prettier.
I'll step up. I'm going to make it right with Halo.
So I like to think of the geography of the DC world on top of our own geography. And I like that just outside of, you know, sort of Los Angeles, I can get to Big Bear very fast. We can get to that cool bridge that's in every car commercial. And, of course, I laugh every time it says Burbank. I'm very familiar with that location in real life. I like how it's Star City somewhere else, a fantastical world. But here, it's Burbank is the same in every universe.
They make TV there.
Oh, look at that. See?
And
the lullaby.
It's so cool. The whole outro really just was a great added touch for this season.
It's nice. It adds a little more character for all of the, I don't know, you can call them the pets, maybe, of the... Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
They all care in their own way. They have their personalities.
They're all charming.
And they all like to hang out in the same areas and rest. But keep a watchful eye. Well, that's the episode. I forget how quick they are.
Not all of them.
Well, this felt really fast to me.
Well, this was action-packed, but just so viewers know, the episodes vary in length, and none of them are short.
Oh, no. It was metaphorically short. Well, that's the end. I guess let's wrap it up. I'm Matt Patterson.
I'm D.W. Ferranti.
I'm Greg Weissman.
I'm Brandon Vietti.
And thanks for listening.
Bye.